This is a guy by the name of Marlon Shirley, who I've never met before, but I'm very intrigued by his story. Marlon Shirley has the title of fastest amputee in the world. He had to have his foot amputated when he was a young boy, and he'll tell you that story in just a second here. But he's really turned his adult life into this kind of miraculous athletic story. He's gone off to the Paralympics and won gold medals a couple of times. He's won a couple of ESPY awards, and he was named one of the role models of the 21st century. And it's a pretty remarkable story, and I'm happy to have him on the show. Marlon, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for coming on the show here. Let's start with how you lost your foot.
Well, when I was 3 years old, I was taken from my mother. We were living on the streets in Las Vegas. One of the orphanages I was in was out in Boulder City, Nevada, and our caretaker was letting a friend and I play around the lawnmower while he was cutting the grass, and he turned. I didn't see him, and I ran up to him to jump on the lawnmower, and I fell under it.
Oh. Wow. And
just
so,
like that.
and so how much of your leg did you lose in the accident?
Well, initially, I lost the front part of my foot and the heel, but obviously, given the bacteria and stuff that had gotten in there from the lawn clippings and stuff, they ended up amputating it right below the ankle. So I had an ankle joint for most of my childhood. It wasn't until I was about 17. I ended up having to get about 4 more inches of it cut off due to injuries from playing football, so on and so forth.
And now you wear a full-time prosthetic leg, right?
Yeah, I've worn a prosthetic since the initial amputation. I just before had the ability to move an ankle so I could develop somewhat of a calf muscle, but, you know, now below the knee it's just basically skin and bone. So it definitely, you know, makes it a lot harder to develop muscles above the knee.
Now, I've seen pictures of you in running stances and in races. And in those, you're wearing, and forgive me for not knowing what the technical name for this is, but I call it the runner's question mark, because that's what it looks like, kind of like a metal blade that's been bent into the shape of an upside-down question mark. What's the actual name of that prosthetic device?
Well, the prosthetic device is made by Oser, and it's actually made out of carbon fiber. The initial design of the foot back in the late 90s was designed by a company called Flexfoot, and they actually designed the initial design off the hind leg of a cheetah. If you look at a sprinter's stance, a lot of people think that we run from heel to toe like distance runners, and we don't. We actually run on the ball of our feet, and that foot's designed to be in that angle. The foot you see me wearing in the videos and on pictures is actually the one that I helped design, which is called a cheetah. And, you know, it's made out of carbon fiber, not metal.
When you wear that, how much faster does that make you than if you were wearing, like, a regular prosthetic foot in a sneaker?
Well, substantially faster. I either have a walking foot or a running foot. And the thing with the walking foot, there's a heel on it. It's not designed to really store the amount of energy that the sprint foot does. So it puts me in the angle that's proper for sprinting. I have no articulation in my ankle. Therefore, I'm not able to, you know, what's called dorsiflex or plantar flex. So that foot's designed to be plantar flexed full time.
So there's no signal getting from your brain to that part of the body below where it was amputated. There's no way for them to have fused nerves or anything into this prosthesis, right?
Well, there's not. And there's technology out there for, say, upper extremity amputees and even lower extremity amputees where they're using signals, neurons, so on and so forth, to mimic what the sound side is doing. But that, I don't need that type of technology. That begins to be a bionic situation.
Yeah.
Where you're actually producing energy, whereas the foot I use is stores energy and returns it back to me.
So when you race, again, I know nothing about this, and so I'm going to sound like an ignoramus, but I'm just curious about these things, so I'm going to ask the questions anyway. When you race, do you start from standard starting blocks?
I do. If you have a chance to go to my website, it's marlonshirley.com. I have videos on there of my races, and honestly, if you were to hold a piece of paper up to the screen from below my waist, you would not notice any difference in my sprinting. And actually, at full speed, everything's moving so fast. There's no hiccups, no gallops, nothing. I've really honed and perfected my running stance, my positions. I've had the best coaches in the world. I'm currently coached right now by Dan Paff, who has coached numerous Olympic gold medalists, world record holders. And that was the obstacle to overcome, is that, you know, I train just like any other able-bodied athlete would. And there's no difference there. The only difference is I got to bring a socket wrench with me to make adjustments.
Wow.
That's about it.
When you are in the starting block, is it a regular starting block like everybody else is using, or does that upside down question mark thing I was referring to need you to have a different kind of device to start from?
No, not at all. That foot is designed to anatomically mimic my sound side. So there's no difference in the starting blocks that I use. The only difference is the shoe. I take a shoe, I cut it in half, so I have cleats on the forefront, but there's no difference in any equipment that I use. And that's why I'm able to race on able-bodied circuits without too much controversy, because I'm not bringing any, you know, type of special, you know, devices out to the track that would give me, you know, any type of advantage over anybody else.
I know my colleagues here in the studio have some questions for you, but I just got to get a couple more out here of my own. There's been that controversy that you talked about was a guy who tried to get into the regular Olympic Games, if you don't mind my using that word. And he had one of those devices for his leg, and they wouldn't let him in.
Well, that's not completely true. His name is Oscar Pistorius, and he's a phenomenal athlete. You know, he and I raced for the gold medal in Athens and in Beijing. And the thing is, he's using two prosthetic devices, and it's not that they didn't allow him into the Olympics. He didn't qualify for the Olympics.
Oh, that's what it was. He wasn't fast enough to qualify along with the able-bodied runners.
Yeah, and mind you, he was very young. He'd only been running for a few years, so don't count him out. He runs for a country that doesn't have the deepest athletic pool in the world, so, you know, very likely that controversy very well will be on the front burners pretty soon. But what he does is he uses two prosthetics, and that's a whole different ball game than when you're looking at, you know, just somebody who's using one. You're messing with a whole different set of mechanics. You know, you're messing with leg length and all these other things that some people look at an advantage. But even when I've raced against able-bodied athletes and beat them, you know, even when I went under 11 seconds, was running, you know, in the tens, people don't look at the disadvantages. They only look at the one or two advantages, and they negate the other 300 disadvantages.
Marlon was the first amputee, by the way, to run 100 meters in under 11 seconds. It was 10.97. Have you beaten that record since?
Well, I have, but not by much. I mean, I've ran a 10.95. I've ran a 10.96. You know, when I was really getting into my prime, one of the, you know, downfalls from what I've done is being the, you know, one of the forefront leading athletes in these designs, is I've been the research and development guinea pig. And so I've, you know, I've gotten a lot of injuries that have been catastrophic due to trying to change things, redesign new legs, which have resulted in, you know, pretty bad injuries.
Yeah, I know you blew out your knee a few years ago, but at the peak of your running ability, at your top speed, if you were out there with other Olympians who were able-bodied, how would you do against them?
I would probably be about 7 to 8 meters behind them going into the finish line. You just can't, you know, you're looking at the top of the top athletes in the world when you're looking at the Olympics. And you're also, you know, unfortunately, you know, in the sprints, we've had so many downfalls with, you know, athletes, you know, cheating, so on and so forth. And so it's not a really fair benchmark. I don't compare myself to them. I don't, you know, they don't compare themselves to me. I was asked the question, you know, actually when I won my first ESPY, you know, how fast do you think you would be if you had, you know, another foot? And I very simply, and I was actually sitting next to Maurice Green, I said, why don't you ask Maurice how fast he would be if he had one?
Yeah.
And so it's you really can't compare the two. The traditional Olympics, phenomenal sport. The Paralympics, I think it's even better. I've met numerous people who've experienced both, and being able to see people out there with real stories, true stories, competing at world-class levels, it's nothing like you've ever seen before.
Marlon, we have our own world-class athlete on this show. Her name's Tina Dalpia. She has a question for you.
Excellent.
Hi. No, my question is, did you always want to do this, or was it overcoming the challenge that made you want to run in an Olympic sport like that? I mean, did you always do athletic things?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I honestly never thought about being a runner, never even pursued it. I was actually a high jumper. I was a 6'7" high jumper as a freshman in high school. I'd actually take my prosthetic leg off and hop to the bar and do a front flip over it. And that's really what got me on the scene as far as being an elite athlete. I just happened to go to a track meet with a friend of mine. There happened to be a coach there who was a Paralympic coach. he used to coach an athlete named Tony Valtentest, who was, you know, 96 gold medalist. And he asked me if I'd ever heard of the Paralympics. I said no. And he's like, well, you just broke the world record in the high jump by 6 inches.
Wow.
He says, why don't you come down to Chula Vista and compete and see what happens? And from there, it's the rest is history. I've, you know, I did what anybody else would do is, you know, everybody wants to be a sprinter. It's what decides who's the fastest in the world. It's what everybody wants to watch. Now, earlier I was in basketball, I played football, and I just did athletics just because it's in my blood.
Ian has a question for you, Marlon.
Yeah, actually, too. First, does the bottom of the cheetah leg have like a tread like a sneaker does?
Well, it doesn't. It has, you know, there's what you do is basically with Reebok, I'm sponsored by Reebok, and they design my spikes. What I do with the left side is I cut the plastic plate off and I actually Velcro it to the bottom. Some athletes glue it on so I have the traction that I need to be able to run. But there's no cleat that's actually fastened to the bottom.
Okay, and the second one is, does the cheetah leg go into other events like you were saying high jump and long jump and stuff like that? Do they have special legs for that, or can the cheetah be used for that as well?
And by the way, I'll just add on my little stupid little thing there. Can they make that extra springy for you when you're doing those other events?
Yeah.
Well, and see, that's a controversy in my own sport, and that I'm actually really, really having a hard time dealing with. First part is that the feet are universal through all running events. If you look at the long jump, you're running. I jump off my sound side. What's been a problem is some of the amputees now are jumping off their prosthetics. And I think that you're taking away from the true nature of our sport. I think that they should ban it. I don't think it's ethically correct. When we have athletes that were jumping 17 feet, switch legs, the next jump they were jumping 22 feet. Now, they'll never be 28-foot long jumpers. It's just not going to happen. But you can't make it extra springy. You know, it's physics. You can only, you know, since it's a static device, I can put 100% energy in it, and the most I'm going to get is 100% back. Mm-hmm. It doesn't produce energy like the gastric does. So,
couldn't put some sort of pneumatic device in there, some
like
hydraulic
a pogo
thing.
Stick.
Yeah,
yeah,
some little hydraulic.
Well, yeah. Let's keep it on. Let's keep it respect. It's pogo sticks. I mean, you're not going to be jumping 28 feet off a pogo stick.
That'd be cool.
And then it's not a matter of being more springy or less springy. There's, you know, it's the thickness of the carbon and how much it flexes depends on the performance of the foot. I run on an extremely stiff foot. I mean, extremely stiff. If it's too soft, it's going to snap. I'm going to break it.
All right, Marlon, if you thought these questions were stupid, wait until you hear this one from Dan Strauss.
That's right. Hey, Marlon. Hey, I have a friend that actually has similar. He lost his foot in a lawnmower accident, just like you did. But when he was playing, and I want to ask you if this ever happened to you, he later on in life, when he got a little older, 9, 10, you know, 12, 13, he was playing baseball. He was always an athlete. Mm-hmm. And he had a prosthetic foot, and he would go running the bases. And one time this happened, he tells a story, and he laughs hysterically and makes everyone else laugh. His foot broke, and he didn't know it. The foot broke, and it was backwards. And he's running the bases with this foot backwards.
One foot regular and
one foot regular, the other one backwards. And some people were getting sick watching him, some of the parents.
They didn't know it was real.
Yeah, they didn't know.
Well, I've had a few incidents of my own. Number one, if my foot ever turned around on me, I would probably know it because I'd probably have a hard time figuring out which way to run. But when I was, you know, in football, I was a wide receiver. I was a tight end and started in both those positions, but also as a kicker. And there was one time I was out in the backyard practicing, and I kicked the ball, and my foot went further than the ball. I have broken numerous feet. And, you know, even at World Championships 2003, I was training, and it was in a stadium, so, it was, you know, it was a very big echo. And I was in full sprint, and my prosthetic snapped, and it sounded like a shotgun, and it sounded like a femur bone just snapping in half.
Oh.
But the problem is I'm running 25, 26 miles an hour, and so the ground comes pretty fast.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It's a pretty painful situation.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. I like the idea of the field goal there. How far was that? 30 yards and 1 foot.
Oh, good one.
You can use that.
Now, last question for you, Marlon. How much of an advantage will you have with a prosthetic foot next week at the main event of the World Series of Poker?
that's a great question. Well, let me tell you, the advantage I'm going to have is very simply this. you know, I have fought over a lot of things, and I've, you know, had to discipline myself over a lot of things in my life. And with Full Tilt giving me the opportunity to play, it's not a matter if I'm going to have any type of physical advantage. It comes down to the mental advantage that I feel I have. I love the sport of poker. I think it's great. I've been an athlete professionally for 10 years. And, you know, so I have the dynamics and the knowledge of both sports. And I'll tell you, it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be awesome.
Have you done the main event before?
I've never played the main event.
Have you played any of these events where there are thousands of people in there during the series?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've played some pretty big events before, and I'm going to tell you, the physical toll that you go through, I mean, that's my advantage. I mean, I'm a world-class athlete.
Yeah.
I'm in shape, and I hope that helps me when I'm sitting there for 8 to 10 days, you know, playing for 14 hours a day, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm a poker player myself, and I actually think I do have an advantage over you because you're used to getting up and running around and being in shape and being muscular. I'm used to being the fat, bald guy who sits all day long. So when I'm at a poker table, my life is the same as it always is.
So you just kind of have the chair just mold around your body, right?
It doesn't really have much choice.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, this event is awesome. And, you know, when I went through a really bad injury earlier this year, and I'm going to tell you, poker really was a big advantage of me being able to get over what happened with me going into Beijing when I got staph infection. I mean, I was non-weight-bearing, not able to walk for 3 months. And, you know, just being able to play online, you know, even though it was just play money, it's great just to keep your mind going. It's competitive. I just love the sport, you know, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this. I'm really looking forward to it next week.
Yeah, it should be very cool. I wish you a lot of luck. I hope you make it through day one, day two, day three. I hope you make it to the final table, which would be very, very cool. But before I let you go, when is your next athletic event?
Well, there might be one part that we skipped over. In Beijing, I had a 6-meter lead on Oscar, and my Achilles ruptured. So in the finals, you know, I went down on the track at 50 meters. So right now I'm rehabbing a severe Achilles injury.
Oh, boy, that's tough to come back from.
No, it is, and things are going really well. I'm looking at competing next July, you know, starting the season next July and then getting into world championships in 2011. So it's great that I have poker to fall back on right now to give me something to do because I'm driving me nuts, you know, just doing nothing but rehab every day.
I'm sure. Well, good luck with that. It's a real pleasure to meet you, and I know that you've done all sorts of motivational stuff, and your story is so inspirational. It's a pleasure to meet you. Just because of that, and I'll tell people again, the website is Marlon, M-A-R-L-O-N, Shirley.com, and you can go and you can read about what this guy does and follow his exploits. And
is it Shirley or Shirley?
S-H-I-R-L-E-Y.
Okay. Surely you just.
I'm going to keep a daily blog. I'm going to keep everybody up to date on this World Series of Poker run. You know, it's more than just for myself. It's for my foundations. It's for, you know, a lot of different opportunities. And I really want everyone to get involved in this as much as they can. And I hope everyone has as much fun as I hope I'm going to have.
Well, I'm going to be out there for the main event, so maybe I'll run into you at some point.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're just right outside. Come over to the Full Tilt, you know, lounge and hang out with us. We'd
absolutely.
Love that.
Thanks, Marlon. I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate you.
Marlon Shirley, the fastest amputee in the world, here on the Large Morning Show in the afternoon. This is the Big 550 KTRS.